It's the Tiltcast, episode 624, Adulting Sucks.
Yep, it does.
And this week, guys, we talk No Rest for the Wicked.
Yeah.
The Division 2. And Insomniac's Marvel's Spider-Man 2. Stay tuned.
No Rest for the Wicked, indeed.
Lots of twos. We're back.
Oh. I was supposed to open a can. I already opened it. So.
Yeah, it's the Tiltcast.
It is.
It's been a minute.
Has it been?
Yeah.
It's been at least a week. I'm sure of it. At least 1 week.
It is
a little bit more.
12:09 on 7/20, year 2025.
In central time hours.
Yeah.
I'm ahead. I've time traveled.
We are all back in the studio. It's been a minute. We've had a lot of things going on. It's an M-rated show. I'm Nos.
Jason.
I'm Rust.
And the three of us, you're going to get about who knows how much bullshit, but we'll see. Some games, some news. I think we almost forgot how to do this damn show. We upgraded the computer, and then we had to go through some things to get everything working. And that scrapped last week's episode. But
yeah, well, you know, it was kind of last week was a wash anyway. But yeah, the computer absolutely needed an upgrade.
It's not even the same computer. As soon as I pull this drive out, it's literally nothing left from the other machine.
Well, that's because the other machine I built on a freaking shoestring budget. And I was like, what can I throw together that can be considered a computer that we could feasibly record off of until some of us, one of us, any of us could actually, like, you know, improve upon this? I think I put it together for $400 over the course of like a weekend, and we'd been recording on it for what, 8 years?
Maybe 10.
Jesus. It was basically a calculator. We couldn't allow it to do Windows updates at the same time as we were recording because it would cause issues with the recording. It had problems.
I did rename the computer to the Tilt Bus.
The Tilt Bus?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, at this point, that thing's so powerful, like, Justin could even game on it while recording.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And just based off of his CPU alone. I mean, granted, because of what video cards you put in it, you're not going to, like, game at high fidelity. But, like, you could literally game on that thing while recording, and that CPU wouldn't bottleneck you at all.
Well, you know, it's got 8 gigs of DDR4 on the video card. It's a Radeon RX 580. And then it's got – I upgraded my CPU. So now we've got – I used the CPU that I was using in my other machine. So it's an AM4. It's a Ryzen 9 5900X. And I've got 32 gigs of DDR4 in here now, up from 16 of like DDR3. It's a tale of like how much I had to upgrade. So it's like, yeah, I'll just reuse everything. And I didn't realize that you were using, was an ITX board, I think? An ITX or
it was whatever was the cheapest at the time.
It was a small board.
It was a micro ATX, I think.
Yeah, I think it was a micro
ATX board.
Yeah, I think it was a micro ATX because that case was not that big, and the whole thing weighed like 7 pounds. So I got ready to upgrade.
I could have done a mini. It's one step up from a mini PC.
I could
have affordable mini PCs.
Yeah, I could have done a mini PC to be honest with you, but I didn't want to rebuy a motherboard too. And it was cheaper to buy another case than it was to buy a mini ITX board so that I could fit it in that case. So I got a nicer case, the big old fishbowl. And then I bought a cooler. And then
Scope Creep, and it just decided to just turn into a second gaming machine in your other room.
Yeah, so we ended up to upgrade this. It literally just has the old hard drive in it because I needed to transfer everything over, and we've got everything. We got everything mirrored on that drive. It even has Windows 10 still installed on it. So when I boot this sucker up at dual boots, you know, it's like, do you want to do Windows 11 or 10? I'm like, 11, please. But I'd got a new board for my new machine. Is that a 99? Is it a 9900X 3D? I think is what it is.
That,
the AMD, the AM5.
Did you end up getting the one
we've been looking at? Yeah, the one we've been looking at forever because I got it at 30% under MSRP.
Oh, that was the 9950X.
Yeah, 9900X3D.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting that for my main machine because I wanted to finally upgrade my GPU. And then I pulled my 5900 out of that and put it in here. But the only things I salvaged from the other machine was the board, the RAM, and the CPU, which is that's a decent chunk of it right there. Didn't have a display drive. It's not an all-in-one integrated graphics GPU or CPU. So I had to buy a graphics card. So I was out of graphics card. Then the case was too small. So I bought another case, which cost me about $60 on Amazon. Not too bad, honestly. I used the power supply. So there's that. So I used the power supply. Yeah.
It does have at least one thing in it.
And then I used I didn't want to order a cooler, so I just Best Buy had a Articool cooler for $35, which is more than enough for this. But I did want a cooler on it in case I wanted to overclock it. But I'm not overclocking anything on this. I'm not even running XMP on it right now because I wanted to make sure that I had as stable a platform as possible for recording. I didn't want anything to screw up. But at 32 gigs of RAM, like, I'm fine.
It's perfectly fine. It's overbuilt for what it's doing.
It's overbuilt. But that's what we do around here.
Yeah. It's really overbuilt. But, hey, I have been known to pick up and do overbuilt machines for fucking random shit, too. I have to remember that... not everything has to be overbuilt, especially when I'm doing stuff for work.
Well, it's like I literally just put a new graphics card in here and then it's running all modern games.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Buy a 3600 and put it in here and I'm running literally everything.
Yeah, easily. You know, that machine is almost running. Very similar spec to what I had previously because I also went to the 9950 X3D.
It's a baller of a CPU.
Oh yeah, that's
dude. Nothing is it never. I never even hit like 30% utilization to be honest, so far.
Which means you're overbuilt. But yeah, hey, whatever.
But it's
It's called future-proofing because we love those terms in IT.
I did forget. So when I was upgrading my normal machine, they had a bundle that came with a 1 terabyte NVMe. So that's actually what I got in here is a Kingston 1 terabyte NVMe, which everything's running off of.
Not bad.
So
yeah,
but
so
on the
I think since last time we talked or when we had recorded, Amazon Prime Day actually happened, right? So.
Yeah, I bought
You got some of the stuff on Prime Day.
Yeah, I got a Western Digital 4 terabyte NVMe for $50 off. I spent like $220 on it.
So you should have looked a little bit harder because the Samsung 990 Evo Plus 4 terabyte drives were about the same price, and they're a much higher quality than the Western Digital ones. I picked up a 4 terabyte, one of those. And because I'm already using all of the N.2 slots on my motherboard, I ended up picking up a Sabrin, NVMe,
the PCI adapter,
PCI adapter, but yeah, this has it's really low profile, so it, you know, it will actually fit right in there. It's just for one of those NVMe drives. That's all I need. It just slots right into the, you know, into a PCI slot, which is perfect.
Yeah,
it has its own aluminum heat sink on it. That is my new game drive, because that shit is fast. Holy fuck, is that fast?
It makes a difference. Just NVMe on everything. Like, I feel like that should just be the standard at this point. Like, when you're thinking about things that make a big difference to you on a day in and day out basis, NVMe, even though, like, it's graphics card for gaming, but just PC building, NVMe is like the biggest difference you will see on everything, just because everything caches and loads off that thing. And they're so much faster than even a standard SSD. Like, it's not worth it to have a spinny drive. I'm slowly, because it takes so fucking long, pulling stuff off a spinny drive and putting it on my backup drive, because I still got like 700 gigs on it, and transferring 700 gigs off an old spinny drive is like a day. So I'm moving it about 50 gigs at a time, because it just takes so damn long. But when it's funny, like, that takes that long, right? But transferring from one drive to another drive inside my machine, I got four NVMe's in my regular machine, which is crazy. But I've got one dedicated straight for photo editing. So I dump everything I'm editing on this one drive. And in three shows, go figure, I'm at 600 gigs so far. So I've got to cool that down a little bit. But when I was playing around with it, because I couldn't figure out which one I wanted my photo drive to be, I moved like 400 gigs off one drive to the other drive, and we're talking like less than 30 minutes for a half a terabyte. Yeah. Like, it's just insane how fast that is.
I'll tell you, I've learned a little bit about storage. You know, I've known about it, but
I really wish I could have this technology on my camera, because I still got to use SD cards, and the fastest read write that I can get on an SD card is about 170 megabytes a second. Which still,
SD is not great.
Yeah, and it's still slower than an SSD, right? So I got home last night. I'm trying to go the fastest route possible. I've got an adapter that goes to USB-C, and even plugging that in and moving, I want to say it was 200 gigs onto my machine, right, of photos, that still took me like 15 minutes, right? It's late at night. I wanted like, just call real quick and see if there's any, like, it's not real interesting, but my workflow is dump everything, grab all of that stuff, look at the dates or the times on everything so I can divide it by band. And while it's dropping in, I create folders for everything. And so I can look at it in list view and then just drag and drop stuff into folders so that I can edit it in Lightroom. But like that workflow before, when I really first started, I was using a spinny drive for all of this stuff, you know, your standard hard drive, like we're talking hours sometimes to transfer it down from my camera over, right? Big show, 3 hours. You're just like,
oh yeah.
I guess my computer's tied up for 3 hours. So I'd dump it, go to sleep, wake up, and then start editing, and then loading that a show in Lightroom. Right. So let's say it's like 700 pictures. That might take 5-10 minutes just to load it into Lightroom in preview mode. You're just like, this is ridiculous. But I will tell you, I'm glad I overbuilt it a little bit. So I'm using 64 gigs of RAM on the main machine with DDR5. And I did find out you can't XMP if you're using all four slots on that board, which is kind of a bummer. However, it's still running pretty fast.
That's the difference between maybe... You know, I don't know. If you're...
I'm going to get two 32 gig sticks or something.
Yeah. So if you're using XMP, you're going to notice... It'll be a noticeable difference, but the amount of difference that you have for your transfer speeds on memory is going to be... I mean, you're nitpicking additional, frames per second out of things. You know, so...
Well,
for you...
Lightroom's a hog, bro.
Workflow.
Lightroom's a hog. Like I use Lightroom, and I use Topaz AI denoise, And between both of those, while I was editing this morning, I'm talking 55 gigs of my RAM. It's like, oh, you got more RAM? Let's eat some more up. It's like, damn, yeah. Bro.
It's for you. It's not, you're not going to notice it, you know, for your workflow, nearly as much as say you would for like gaming, and it's still going to be far.
Oh, I have
far overbuilt for gaming. So you're going to be fine.
There's zero bottleneck on gaming right now. I've been playing all sorts of games, which I'll talk about in a minute, but I don't know if they're well optimized or not. It doesn't fucking matter because this thing is just eating everything's breakfast.
Like, you're brute forcing everything.
Well, I mean, that thing's like, you know, as far as, you know, handling frames and everything, with that second generation 3D V-Cache, it's just like, or I'm sorry, third generation 3D V-Cache. You're just like chewing through everything. The only thing that could bottleneck, that has been proven that can bottleneck that CPU, is if you have like a fucking 4090 in your generating like AI video or some shit, because AI will chew up a lot of that CPU.
Yeah, and fuck AI.
I mean, from a creator standpoint, yeah.
Yeah, I was having this. Me and Jason were having this conversation with the boys on Friday night. And I think from my, you know, the only thing I'm good with art wise is photos, right? Like, I don't know any other art. I suck at drawing. But I was thinking about it. It's like, how would people use AI in the future for photos? And I think what they'll do is, so right now there's practical application of AI. So I use it to remove water bottles a lot because people have water bottles on stage. I use AI for lens spots because it does a better job than the regular Lightroom tool. But Lightroom's got a built-in AI thing. And I use AI for occasionally I'll use it for face recovery. So say somebody's just slightly out of focus in the background and I want to pull it back in. I'll use that and it'll clean some stuff up. But it never looks as good as me naturally taking the photo. And what I think people will do is, I don't think you can't just catch moments and then say AI, right? Like AI wasn't there, right? So, but I think what people will do is they'll take a bunch of crappy photos and put in AI prompts to regenerate those photos to be better photos. I think that's how people are going to use AI to hack photography later, which I think sucks because it does take a lot of thought, a lot of be in the right place at the right time, and a lot of like just experience doing this to know how to shoot bands in a good way. And I do some stuff with some lens filters, so pieces of glass, prisms, to kind of make some of my stuff pop a lot more. And that stuff could be generated by AI, but I don't even screw that thing on. Like, I'm literally holding that lens at different angles to capture different light refractions to make different settings for the photos that I take, and they're all unique. Like, I can never capture the same thing twice because it's based on what the light is like in the room and what angle I was at, right? What the person was doing when I took the photo. So it's 100% unique, right? Like, you could probably fake some of that with AI, but
it doesn't look good. Like, it really doesn't. You know, I have never really, I use AI in different ways, but I use it basically like an advanced search engine, right? It's, you know, for what I do for work. I don't ever use it for creativity because every time I've used it for anything that I would consider creative, it's just subpar. Like, everything about it is subpar. And I never like the end result. I'll use it for, you know, if I need to touch something up. But even then, like, it's really weird. Like, I had a piece of art that, you know, that's, that I was using for a background, right? For a PC background. But I didn't like how some of the noise in it was. Like, the, you know, you get noise for on some blacks on certain digital some digital photos or recreations, and I was just running it through AI to see if I could actually like smooth out the blacks, right? And it would never do it the way that I wanted it to do it. And I ended up just pulling up Adobe tools and just doing it myself because I could use the tools to do it myself.
There is one AI that Topaz AI does a fantastic job of smoothing out blacks in noisy photos. When I say noisy, you use settings on your camera that enhance the light levels digitally. And when you do that, it creates little specks of white in your photo, right? Or specks of color. And that Topaz does a really good job of taking that and turning it back black.
Okay. Well, I'm not using Topaz. I was just using something else. But but even then, you have specific tools that are good at specific things. Not all AIs are built the same. And honestly, this actually gets into, from creative to, practical use, even in, in the industry that we're interested in, tech and gaming, that shit is, it's crazy because, used to be, 10 years ago, if you were a game developer, you needed to learn the tools, the code. If you didn't know the tool or how to code it, then you ended up finding a subject matter expert that could help you with what you were trying to do. And nowadays, that subject matter expert has been basically combined into the knowledge pool of certain AIs that game developers are utilizing as a tool, kind of like what you use for Topaz, specifically for coding. And that shit is scary because as soon as you start taking out human creativity from like the coding processes and what you want to do in in just like a ass random game, right? You end up homogenizing everything. And it just feels wrong. from a standpoint where I'm sitting here going, Justin, I would not want your hobby, your pro hobby to be homogenized into something that an AI could do. You have a unique skill. I think that it is fucking fantastic you have a unique skill. And until just now, I didn't know how you did the prism thing, so that's fucking crazy. But the idea of that shit going away because somebody has built a purpose-built AI to do just that is scary as fuck. And that is what is literally happening right now in the tech space. Purpose-built AIs specifically to code programs and games and shit like that. And it's sucking out human creativity from the whole process. It's just scary as fuck, man. It makes my skin crawl. Like, I will admit, taking a 90% finished product that already has all of the human creativity put into it, and then going, hey, I'm going to use this tool to optimize this that doesn't remove the human creativity, but basically removes all of the software bugs that would cause the game to slow down or have issues later on or have a bad launch. Take that, throw that in there and have AI analyze that and see, hey, let's take the human error out of it, but don't take the human creativity out of it. I can see that as a tool, but I don't want to see it as a replacement.
Yeah, I sent you guys a photo in our group chat. If you zoom in on the photo, this is a photo one of my at a professional photographer shooting alongside of me last weekend, and it's super blue because, well, I was in the dark. But if you zoom up on my hand, you can see me using a piece of glass in front of my camera.
That is amazing. I always you had said something about having a prism, but I was or using prisms, but I never really thought about the fact that you were actually shooting through a refractive lens, basically in front of your camera.
Never
occurred to me.
You're supposed to screw them on, and I found I had better creative freedom if I started holding them and doing different angles. So it's pretty hard to do. I loaned it to a couple of people while I was playing with it, and obviously I've got a lot more practice.
Yeah, but I mean, you get that prism shot whenever you're doing prisms. Like you end up getting it so that it doesn't
completely obscure the photo.
Subject. Yeah, the subject of your photo doesn't get screwed up by the prism. It just adds an extra effect. And that is, seeing this photo here, holy shit, dude. Like, seriously, holy shit. That is next level artist shit right there. That is amazing. I'm giving you massive props because I would never have that creativity.
I'm trying to, won't say his name, but there is a very, very, he'll never listen to this podcast. I get cock-blocked by the most famous photographer in town a lot. And so I've made it my mission to be better than him. And in a lot of ways, I have some stuff that stands out a lot more. So there's a band called the Ugly Cowboys that I took pictures of them last weekend. And every show announcement they have leading up, they've used all the photos that I've done for them for that. And I got a pretty good tip from them too, like after the fact, because they were just a warm-up band that I was shooting pictures for. There's a band called Jack Ketch and the Bilgerat Bastards, and they are very much like a mix between the Dropkick Murphys and Ailstorm. Fully pirate-themed, right? Super fun, exceptionally tight. They play a pretty long show. But they hired me to do photos last weekend, and then, they had some openers, and there was a band that kind of sounded like the Pixies called the Ugly Cowboys. Shot some pictures of them, and then they sent me some messages like, do you have Cash App? I was like, yeah, I was just warming up. It's like, we like these a lot. So, made some money.
It's pretty crazy, dude.
Yeah, the Ugly Cowboys are pretty good. I highly recommend them. They only got 500 followers.
Hell yeah.
Super good. Super good life. It's a boyfriend and girlfriend that do a lot of dirty songs.
I mean, it's pirate themed.
They're not pirate. They're not pirate themed.
Oh, okay.
They were just opening for the pirate band.
Ah, gotcha. Okay, gotcha. I'm misheard. So,
perfect. But yeah.
Awesome. I don't know, man. It's like,
fuck AI. Fuck AI. You can do a lot of things without using AI. And I hope it doesn't run people out of business. I can see people using AI for, scripting lines in a show. I can use, there's a lot of ways that you can, I think, outdo it. But I don't know if you guys heard this, but there was a, I'm not going to say the name of the band because I don't want anybody else to check them out, but Spotify had a band with over a million listens in a month. And it turns out the entire band, the members, the lyrics, the music, everything was AI generated.
Oh, jeez. And that right there is just like eroding human creativity, just like I was saying. And I know that it was rampant for a while. Like just you know, just over the past like month and a half, 2 months, you know, if you're on social media at all, you probably have seen, you know, seen the fucking Sasquatch or you know, Bigfoot fucking AI generated videos, and they're fucking rampant, right? Completely generated by AI. Like, even the words are generated by AI. I know YouTube has actually just done something recently about you know, AI generated content. If it, you know, if it doesn't have an element of human creativity in it, it can't be monetized anymore.
That's good.
So I mean, it can use AI elements, but if it's not, you know, generated by a human or have, you know, creative input by a human, then it can't be monetized. And I guess there's some kind of algorithm that can actually detect that shit. But yeah, AI is going to, it's one of the most disruptive and simultaneously, you know, useful, you know, pieces of technology that's happened in recent memory, right? It's disruptive in the fact that, you know, it has the ability to just completely change how content is created. And that is all content, from creative content to students writing papers to freaking, like, you know, me using it for all employee emails, for fuck's sake, you know, things like that. You know, it requires less human input by the day, it seems like. And that is, yeah, it is concerning. We're stepping closer and closer to it's going to be a different kind of Judgment Day than Terminator, because I doubt that it's, you know, the kind of Skynet that is like in the movies. But it is going to be a kind of Skynet. This is my tinfoil hat coming on right now. It's going to be a different kind of Skynet, where basically we have stepped away from the creative process and we just consume. And that is... oh, it's creepy. It's very creepy, man. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, and, you know, as we were talking, I said, you know, there are pros and cons to all of it, right? Like, there are certain things, like the large language models, I absolutely hate that people are using them for, you know, like for example, for business documents. And most of it's just because the AI has a tendency to chat GPT specifically, because, you know, that's like what Copilot and shit's running off of. That just make it absolutely apparent to me, someone who's struggled with his entire career and learned to format things properly, depending on whether or not it's like an internal email or an email to a customer, or you're doing a write-up about an employee, positive or negative, etc. It has a tendency to, for example, over embellish and gush about things in a positive way. Also, also like the long breaking dash, in the middle of sentences when it should be using like a comma or a semicolon, to continue a sentence, just drives me absolutely fucking crazy. You know, shit like that, that I'm just like, you know, I understand if you've never had to before, or you've always struggled with business writing, I get it. Or just writing, you know, let's even take it out of business, just writing in general, you know, say you're working on your resume, or you're just writing an essay, say, about yourself for a college application or something like that. It's overly gushy to a point where I immediately recognize it, and I'm like, I'm not accepting what you've written. I'm not taking this. You obviously used AI and did not work on this yourself. And I constantly have to rewrite stuff that people send to me at work, because I can tell they fucking used it. You know, and while it does very good at some basic things, and it's very useful, like what you and I primarily use it for, Rusty, is, you know, like helping us write a line of code for like a query out of a SQL file server, or you know, say we need a line of C++ code for, you know, for editing some existing thing we have to use, right, or something like that. And that's all great. Using it like a search aggregator, but being aware that you need to check the sources it's using, because, you know, most of these are really good about providing you links for the sources that it pulled, can be great. But man, it just, people are using it in all the wrong ways for all the wrong stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with image and video generation, right? Like, I understand it's, and I use it as, you know, like great tools for say eliminating objects out of the background without me having to spend, you know, like 20 minutes or sometimes a lot more to remove a person or an object out of one photo to use it in another, you know, stuff like that. Or say, change the background to a setting more appropriate for the project you're working on. It's great for that sort of thing. Video generation. It's great for the video generation stuff can be really useful if you're, again, if you're using it for certain things that, you know, you may not be a professional videographer for, but you need to like flesh out a concept to show the artists who would actually go, say, film a commercial or a series or something like that, right? It's great for that sort of thing. But people just using it like to create all these short form scam videos, trying to sell you something or trying to scam you into sending a certain person or company money, you know, the good old Arabian Prince scam, right?
That's Nigerian Prince.
Nigerian Prince.
But I'll tell you right now, whatever. I am the Nigerian prince's, nephew, and you can send me as much money as you want.
Or, you know, like I've seen like a lot of ads where they've cut together a bunch of these short generated stuff, trying to use celebrities like Joe Rogan he's the only one I can think of off the top of my head that I remember the name for, trying to sell you like weight loss products.
Oh yeah.
Right? Like, and they're obvious to me because I've used it and I've trained myself how to use a lot of these tools. But man, there are like like a lot of people that are falling for this shit. It'd be really easy, and this is part, and I'm actually thankful that I don't have a whole lot of images of me out there on social media or the internet, you know, that are like from a bunch of different angles of my face or stuff.
You don't have any on the internet except for things that people have tagged you on. I think
exactly
you've posted on your Facebook like once a year, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. So that's actually good for this world right now, because it would be very hard for somebody to like just take my photos, train a face model off of my photos, and like put together some scam video to send my parents to scheme them out of money, right? But that is a type of scam that's going on right now. Like people using AI to like do video calls to family members. Oh, I've been in this horrible accident, yada yada, and I need however much money, right?
Oh yeah.
I
would love to see.
It's very obvious to me when those are AI videos, because I know what to look for. My parents, who are in their 70s, they don't know. Now they do now because I've showed them examples. But not everybody's savvy enough to show their parents examples. And in fact, Corridor Digital has a video up that's very helpful to that fact. If you ever want to send that to your family members, they put that up like 3 weeks ago or something. It's good shit. But like, if you don't know what to look for, like inconsistencies in like teeth, for example, or eye movement, or objects in the background not following logical tracks, right? Like, say a person walking through your background, all of a sudden disappearing as they cross behind you and not showing up on the other side, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's that sort of stuff that AI is being used for right now that's like, I can't support it. I can't support people generating images and trying to pass it off as their own art. Like whole cloth images. You know, that shit's not cool.
Can you imagine an AI-generated scam based off of me? Because all of the pictures that I have up on the internet have been prior to my weight loss. You would never be able to get it. They would never get it right.
Oh, yeah, no.
It would be super apparent to my, to my immediate family that it was not me, because it's like, holy shit. that'd be amazing. But I mean, it's for people who, people like yourself, or, anybody that's, that hasn't had, that kind of, massive change in their life. Yeah. It would definitely be a problem. But yeah, I get it. You're entirely right. AI. Fuck AI.
Not a fan. But yeah,
I mean, I'm a fan of AI, but using the AI tools,
well, it's
in
it's
a positive a, way.
It's right? supposed to reduce my mundane work so that I have more time for art, not make my art.
Exactly. I'm 100%.
Well, has anybody been up to anything interesting? We kind of got way off the beaten trail here.
Yeah, we did.
We did. I've not done a whole lot that's super exciting other than, kids sports and
you helped me make Philly cheesesteaks.
Video games, but we can get to that later.
I mean, you helped me make Philly cheesesteaks the other night.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Though I will say you grilled them things to perfection, sir. Them thin ass fucking ribeyes.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even a ribeye. It was a chuck steak. So they had a.
Well, it still tasted great.
Yeah, you can get Walmart sells prepackaged shaved chuck steak, and it's perfect for tacos, and it's perfect for Philly cheesesteaks. Or random steak sandwiches like I had last night before I went out and shot pictures. They're pretty good.
Yeah.
But anybody... I completely lost my train of thought. I've been doing pictures. That's the only interesting... I was in at West Virginia, but I don't know if I was... I was in West Virginia before we did our last show. Yeah, last week was a mess. I left on Monday to go to West Virginia at about 8:30 in the morning, and then I didn't get to the town that I was supposed to go to till 8:30 at night. There's no close airport to where I needed to go, and because the airport's so small, I had one or two options. I can go to Roanoke, which was 2 hours away from the site I was going to, or I can go to Charlotte, North Carolina, which is 3 hours and some change from the site I was needing to go to.
Yeah.
So it's like you pick, and either one of them had delays. So like flying out of here, I flew to Chicago, sat there till about 1 o'clock, 1:30, and then didn't get into Roanoke until, well, it's also Eastern time, so about 5 o'clock. And then by the time I got my rental car and got dinner, like it was already after six, and didn't get into a hotel in West Virginia till right around 8:30. And then I was there for a day. And then I was the next day, we left at lunch, and I didn't get back till 10:45 at night on Wednesday. So it was, and then I had, it's just back to back doing stuff. Adulting sucks.
It does. I agree. 100%.
It does suck. Yeah, this summer has been a whole lot busier than I anticipated.
I still don't have my pool set up. Like, this is blasphemy. It's the middle of July.
Yeah, I mean, you wait much longer, you might as well not put it up.
Right. Is it worth it?
I got to trim a tree. I was debating on doing it today, but I got to edit photos. So by next weekend, I'm going to have it up.
See?
I'm having it up before my birthday.
Yeah? Goddamn birthday. Oh, shit. I'm going to get older.
Yeah, we're all getting older within the next 6 weeks. We're all a year older.
Yep.
And well, officially.
Thanks for reminding me. I just want to turn back time. But, yeah.
Well, let's just transition to this. What's Jason, what have you been playing? I'll start with you.
I spent the entirety of last week playing Marvel's Spider-Man 2 from Insomniac Games.
Steam sale?
Yep, got it on the Steam sale for, it was like $35 or $40.
That's not bad.
Save some money on it. Went ahead and pre-ordered, RoboCop Rogue City Unfinished Business because, God, I love the first one. Either way, that just came out a couple days ago, so I've not really dug into that one yet. But Spider-Man 2, man, some observations. I loved the first game. I played the kind of standalone expansion that they decided to charge you a full $60 for, Miles Morales, because we got it for Titan used on his PS4. And yeah, that was okay, but I felt like they were just, it wasn't as good because they were kind of trying to find their footing writing for that character, and basically the plot of that game's that Peter and MJ are out over in Europe helping Silver Sable with shit in Zakaria or whatever the that country was. Either way, the game just really wasn't all that great. I didn't think it. I would have, and I'm glad I didn't. I would have never spent $60 for that, like a lot of people did, the $50 or $60. But the first Spider-Man was great, right? Like, I think we all had pretty positive opinions of it. It was the first game that really did like web swinging and stuff like that, right? It did all the combat, right? It took a lot of cues from the Arkham series games. When it came to the combat system. And two's just that, but dialed up a few notches. It took another cue from the Arkham series, by contextually flipping between Peter Parker and Miles Morales. Based on the flow of the story and the way that they wrote the story, that flows really, really, really well. The big bad villain in the game, and you know, I'm going to say it because that's been out forever on PlayStation. It's just only been out on PC, what, like 8 months or something like that. The big bad villain is Kraven the Hunter for the first half of the game, and then the second half of the game it's Venom. They do the whole symbiote introduction storyline, but with a twist. So instead of Flash Thompson being involved, the Venom is actually ends up being Harry Osborn, because Norman used the symbiote to heal Harry of the illness that killed his wife.
Huh.
And it makes for a really great story. I won't get into the story details. Anymore, but it does make for a very enjoyable story to play through. So much so that after buying it, I basically played it for 2 or 3 hours a night and ended up finishing it right before we were going to record last Sunday, before we ended up not recording.
Yeah. It happens.
And I dove right into right into a new game plus, and I will say that the combat abilities with the symbiote, God, they're super fun to play, and make things super enjoyable through that entire second half, but. Insomniac just, at least right now, unless there's major changes in their team, I mean, they're just writing really good Spider-Man stories, and I'm here for it. It's definitely worth the full price. I just, you know, being a poor person, try to never pay full price for games if I can help it.
Called being a cheap bastard.
Yeah,
that's okay.
But man, that game is totally worth it. If you enjoyed the first game, this is that without any of the little quirky issues that the first game, you know, ended up having worked through with the PC port. None of those are there this time around. I was, because of my CPU being the 9900, when playing it on my 4K TV, I had to actually turn off all the ray tracing, because that's a pretty big beast, and that's a lot of things to render there. And I think just the 10 gigs of RAM on my 3080 isn't enough RAM for that game at 4K. But I mean, it, once I realized I need to turn off the ray tracing, it ran super smooth. And if I run it on my 1080p monitor, I can have everything turned up to 11. And the game looks absolutely amazing. So it is optimized much better for the PC port this time around than the first game was out there. I just really thoroughly enjoyed that game.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, it's... I don't think I've ever played any of the Spider-Mans, but then again...
We haven't in a while.
Oh, that's right. Just Justin and I. That's right.
Yeah, I've never really played any of the Spider-Man games, but then again, I have not had any luck with, you know, any of the, you know, any Marvel game, really. I've never really liked any of the Marvel games. You know, I own a few of them, but I really don't like any of them. I mean, even the one that's like fucking the tactical game that's, I don't remember. Why am I drawing a blank here? Fucking. It has to do with I don't know, man. I can't remember. This is kind of like Marvel, but XCOM. You remember what I'm talking about?
No.
I know you played it. I will find it later, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's made by Jake Solomon.
I'm looking through my massive freaking library right now because it's bothering me. Midnight Suns. That's it.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you could just look up Firaxis Games, you could find it.
Yeah, Midnight Suns. I mean, I own that game. I think I picked it up on a sale. And
it's a pretty good, one. 4.25 out of 5 game.
Yeah, I just couldn't get into it. It's probably because of all the extra shit that's like, you know, the
relationship simulator on the side.
Yes, the relationship simulator. I hate that shit. Why? Just throw the, you know.
You get extra abilities if you become friends with people.
Right. I really don't care. I definitely don't want to be friends with fucking Tony Stark.
It pads out its length a little bit with that, but the actual like moment to moment battle stuff's pretty good.
It's all right. I will amend. Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, that was a good game.
That game's excellent. That like completely flew under my radar too.
Yep. I mean, as soon as you get over the fact that it's not the, you know, it's not the same voice actors from the movies.
Yeah, but they
just like.
The quality of their acting is very similar, so it's you forget about it after about an hour.
Right. It's, you know, they capture the, you know, the character. It's just the voices are different, and it takes a little bit of time to adjust to it. But after that, it works. So I will say that I will make Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy is. The one Marvel game that I like. Everything else has just been kind of meh.
Have you been playing anything recently?
Me? No, I don't play games. What? I'm in a gaming podcast. Why the fuck would I play video games? Jesus. You're asking way too much, man. Yes, I play egg game because I sometimes singularly like, you know, fixate on a video game for long periods of time, especially if I'm having any sort of fun with it. And I am wringing every bit of enjoyment I can out of The Division 2. And then I will move on. I'm sure that I will eventually move on, but I am, you know, currently it is filling the need for me to sit down and play a video game for a short period of time, and it gives me something to do. I missed basically 6 years worth of content, you know, and I'm just kind of chewing through it at the moment. And trying some things out. From the very beginning, that game, you know, The Division is it's a good third person tactical shooter, right? You know, it's an MMO light. I don't have to play it with other people. They've done a fantastic job of making it a decent solo experience. So I don't feel like I need to play with other people. And in fact, I think I've only ever done one mission with another person. And that's it. You know, and it's fulfilling the need for a looter shooter right now. And I am probably 85% done with what I want to do with it. The rest of it is basically, you know, your general MMO light upkeep, where you do daily and weekly missions for, you know, for shit over the long period of time to optimize your gear incrementally until it becomes like super maxed out and you don't do anything else but like, you know, slap shit in the face and, you know, laugh because they could never do any damage to you. And at that point, it's like, why do you play the game, right? There is no challenge there. So I do have Stellar Blade basically as the next thing up. If I don't move directly into another game like Borderlands for when that, you know, decides to drop, or you know, something else that comes up on my radar. It being summertime, there's two things that's working against me here. As far as getting time for video games, is A, summertime is generally a lull in video games, so you generally have less substantial releases, you know, in the summer, especially ones that like are what I would consider targeted to me, or to my interest. And then two, this is the first summer since I've lost 143 pounds. I am taking full advantage of that, by not being in the house as much as possible.
It's hard to do that here when the heat index is 108.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not even joking. That's the heat index.
It's going to be a little bit different. Yeah. It's a little different there, than here. The summer's been fairly mild here. We've had a few. Sorry, the dog's barking in the background. So if you hear that, the heat index around here, there's been a couple of days where it's gotten up over 90, 95 degrees, and I've been in the water. I know, still your heart. I've been in the water.
It's 73 degrees there. Feels like 77.
It's, yeah, right now it's, 73, 74 degrees right now. Yeah.
93 feels like 105.
It's a completely different, you know, I'm in a completely different zone of, you know, climate. I get that it's different there. Okay, I do. I understand. I remind people up here the kind of hell that summer is down there. When people are like, oh, I barely ever run the AC here, I'm like,
back in Oklahoma, if you don't have AC, you die. It's a completely different thing.
Shit that I've been doing in the past couple weeks. I went kayaking for the first time ever. I got into a kayak and it didn't.
You can do an Eskimo roll.
It's a sit-on kayak, so not sit-in. There's a difference. An Eskimo roll. I could probably do that if I wasn't totally afraid of the whole idea. I've got a sit-on kayak that I'm using right now. So that's my chosen attack for doing the kayak thing. But that was fun. I went out for a couple hours, kayaking, on a lake essentially. And my goal here is to get out there on a river and do a river ride in a kayak. So if I can get there. The thing is I went from being winded going upstairs to actually enjoying physical activity again. And that's a pretty major change in my mindset. I will eventually get into more games. I really want to try Stellar Blade, so it's probably going to be one of those things.
I need to get back to it.
There's also things around here that I'm doing. The studio room that I'm in right now is due for a clean out and an upgrade. So I'm going to be basically pulling all of my shit out of the studio, and I'm going to be leveling the floor out. So I've got some self-leveling concrete, level the floor out, do some sanding in here. Or if it's smooth enough after the self-leveling, I won't need to do any sanding. And then I'm going to epoxy in here for the first, and I'm going to be concrete dust free for the first time ever in this place. Fantastic. It's everywhere. But yeah, I'm going to get definitely high on epoxy fumes again. But yeah, I don't know, man. Is there like video games that are popping up in the near future that you're going to be looking at?
I'll get to that. I didn't get as much of a chance to dive into Death Stranding because I was playing it the day that we were tentatively podcasting last week, and it didn't happen. And then I was like, I need to figure out what game I'm going to play while I'm on my trip. So I ended up, buying some stuff on Steam Sale. I've got some smaller games to kind of dick around with, but I ended up playing a lot of No Rest for the Wicked on the flights and at, after work while I was down in West Virginia. And then I continued that all the way through yesterday, actually. Just uninstalled it yesterday. So No Rest for the Wicked is made by the guys that made Ori and the Blind Forest. It had a weird development history. Initially, it wasn't tuned very well, and it was pretty hard, and people were bouncing off of it. It's still in early access, but they did a really good job with early access. It had gotten a big update, and I saw that it had gotten a big update, was on sale, because it's kind of an expensive game, but there's a lot of content. I put 35 hours into this, into an early access title of all things. It's a mix of Dark Souls and Diablo. That's the easiest way to say it. So here's how. It's got a story mode, which I played through all of that. And the way that the early access ends that story mode is it kind of gets you to the next spot and you can't go any further. And then it opens up like a roguelite type mode at the end of the game. So you have areas that change dynamically across the map in the roguelike mode, and more powerful monsters spawn in those areas, and you get special materials to upgrade your equipment. It has a random loot roll mechanic for the loot that's dropped, and then you can do a couple of different things. So you can enchant it, which gets rid of all of its sockets. Everything has four sockets, right? And then up to four abilities, kind of like Elden Ring, right? You know, you socket the thing, you know, the, I forgot what they call it, right? But you put an ability on there that would use mana to, for your sword or your spear to do a special attack, right? So it does something similar. The extra, like, what do you call it? Resource you use instead of mana is called focus. You build focus all sorts of different ways. You build focus off different rolls that are on your weapon. So you might build focus by dodging through attacks. You might build focus. You're always going to build focus by attacking something. And then there's a lot of different modifiers that can help you regain your focus. So the way the game plays, though, art style is very cartoony, but very, very, very bright. Very beautiful. Very cel shaded and extremely gory, which you wouldn't expect from Ori at all. It's night, like the only thing I can tell that's similar between that and Ori is that there's the artist is definitely the tone is kind of the same, right? Like really bright, contrasty color palette. But it's like, it's not a peaceful, frenetic game. It's, I'd say peaceful and frenetic in the same sense. It's not like, Ori's not a violent game, right? Like, it kind of is, but not really. It's a side scroller that's kind of a bullet hell. It's pretty fucking hard. But it's not a grisly game. This is a pretty grisly game. Like, just body parts exploding all over the place all the time.
Yeah.
And initially, I guess it ran like shit on different machines too. So that was another reason it wasn't doing well when it first released. Now it's doing, like, there's a lot of positive comments on the reviews. So I was like, this is definitely the time to pick it up. But the way that the game starts off is it starts you off with a story that's going to be in the main game, right? It gets you to a point where the game changes again to, like, another chapter. So it's when I read up on it, it's basically getting you through Act 1. And the loop is, like, you start off on a single map, right? And you go through the map and you gather resources to craft consumables and to upgrade your weapons. And you also upgrade a town. So all the way getting through the first tutorials, you're going through a beach and then working your way through some woods and through a keep to get to a town. And then once you beat the boss and get to the town, you basically beat the tutorial and you kind of unlock the first stage of the game. And so as you're fighting things, you get materials through like chopping trees or mining stuff or digging holes or farming different enemies to give to a guy in your town that upgrades different shops to provide you with better upgrades for your stuff. And all that's in it has a, like a timer that's pretty long. So like I'll give this guy 5 chunks of copper and 5 pine logs and 5 pieces of clay. And then it's like 3 hours of real time that it's going to take for that to upgrade. And on the side of that, you've got like a daily quest. You've got weekly challenges. And those all give you money, materials, loot drops, etc. And then you've got your regular quests. Then you've got your quests with different people in town. And then it's an isometric game. But the way that your character battles things is with, like, you know, a charged heavy and a regular attack. You can dodge through things. You'd have stamina management. You can parry stuff and you can block stuff. And when you first start off, your guy, like, has the shittiest stamina management ever. And it sucks. It's pretty hard. It does get easier though over time. I didn't really look at any build guides. I didn't realize the max level right now is 30. It's a little bit expensive to respec, and it takes a while to get to a point where you can even respec. But I was initially doing a faith dex build and then decided to go a straight faith build. And what that meant is that I had different abilities that I could use to heal myself, and also had really cool, like the scythe was a faith weapon, and I decided I really wanted to use a scythe. And then I really wanted to not use a shield at all. And I wanted to parry with the scythe and dodge through everything. And I got pretty good at parrying and really good at dodging. and really good at managing my stamina, and then also using as a secondary weapon a wand that shot like, it's called like Plague Pinwheel, and it was a rolling cloud of death that would trip things up and knock them, like off-foot them, and often hit them twice in a row. Because it off-foot them into the next part of the wave, which was pretty crazy. The spells are all really cool, so I recommend getting a build that can use a spell of sorts. There is a lot of mixed builds, so you can mix Dex and Faith all right. I found out that it was better to go higher in Faith with a little bit of Dex so that I could use a couple of like enchanted bows for different things. But I also saw that there was a, based on the weapon stats required, right, it looks like there was an intelligence strength build, and there was a, you know, pure faith, pure strength, pure dex, pure focus builds, or magic builds. But yeah, like after a while, I got pretty addicted to this game, and I got pretty addicted to going back out to this area to farm different materials to, like, upgrade my town. And I got addicted to some of the daily quests and then exploring all the dungeons that were around. And then got really addicted to following the story. It's got like full-on cutscenes for everything that are all really highly detailed, you know, like cutscenes based on the art style of the game. I got really addicted to the combat. Like after I got pretty good at it, which did take a while, right? I got really addicted to just going out. And as you level up, those areas that were previously low level change and the enemy types change in them so that nothing's ever too easy. Like you can kind of out level an area and then after a major story event, those areas are now populated with different enemies. It's pretty dynamic. The map's static, but the areas are pretty dynamic. And I like it a lot. I hope they finish this soon. Like, again, it took me about 30-ish hours to get through Act 1. And it's kind of got some... The nice thing is death isn't incredibly punishing. So here's what happens. When you die, you lose durability on your gear, and you have to repair that. Well, you can get a spell pretty early on that will repair durability, and you get that by building up your focus. So I can go fight a few things, like... with the build I have right now, like basically two things and build up my focus and then repair all my gear. But early on, it's pretty expensive. You can buy a little house. Like I've got real estate all through the city. One house is simply just storage. The other house is like all of my crafting thing. And then all of your crafting stuff that you're doing in your house pulls from materials that are stored either in your personal inventory or any chest in town. It also just leaves loot in the world, no matter what happens. Like there is still loot underwater from a level that changed after I did a bunch of things, sitting on the bottom of a flooded room that I flooded like 20 hours prior. Like it's still floating there. The loot just stays, which is crazy. But the levels are really dynamic. There's a huge sense of verticality as you kind of Metroidvania your way through levels. Like there are a lot of like backtracking and paths that you open up to open the level up more. And then as the story progresses, the levels themselves change. It's a really dynamic game. And I cannot wait for the final product. But, you know, like I played through the first act, essentially, which is a big chunk of the game. I was like, man, this is really impressive. I don't know why I slept on this for so long. It's like, oh, yeah, it had mixed reviews forever until pretty recently. It's because optimization sucked and then it's already a pretty hard game, like, not going to lie. I'm a pretty proficient, you know, action RPG guy, and I was having some difficulty with some of the bosses. But in a good way, right? Like, I kind of figured out what I was doing wrong, and then I was like, okay, I can re-approach this a different way and beat it, and eventually I did. There's a lot of stuff at one shot, too, which, towards the end of the game, I was just, like, power overwhelming everything. But yeah. No Rest for the Wicked. Very playable in early access, and it leaves, like I said, it just leaves you off in a roguelike state for the world so you could continue playing if you wanted to and try out new builds, etc., like a new game plus in Diablo. But yeah, there's loot all over the place, and everything, if with enough upgrades, can be awesome because you can add modifiers through enchanting and through different pieces of gems and stuff that add different attributes to the weapon. I really like flaming weapons and ice weapons so far. And I really like wands. Like, it's weird that I can, you know, two-hand a scythe and then flip over to my wand, and because I built up a bunch of focus, like, charge up and shoot a big lava blob down in the middle of the area that I'm fighting in and just annihilate everything. The spells are cool as shit, too. I'm having a blast with it. Like I said, I had to uninstall it, so it's like, I got to play something different. Because RimWorld just dropped yet another expansion, so I might jump into RimWorld or Stellar Blade. Who knows?
Another fucking expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Yeah, the new expansion, it lets you build a spaceship. You can travel to space stations and then have your whole colony self-contained in a spaceship.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And there's another one that has hearing, too. If you play a lot of vanilla RimWorld, this is the best one to start with because of the way the scenario is set up. What is the new RimWorld called? Help me out. Help me out. I got to open up my Steam.
I can't help you. I don't know.
Search Steam RimWorld. Odyssey.
I'm not sure if I want to bring my cannibals onto a spaceship with me.
RimWorld's a good game.
There's always that one that just, like, goes absolutely insane crazy and starts eating the other people.
That game's almost 10 years old, and they keep adding, like, full-on expansions to that game. They're up to, like, 4 or 5 expansions now. We got the horror expansion that I still haven't played with yet, because I've just been looking for time to play RimWorld. But I've got other games I want to play, too. So it's kind of like, when do I play RimWorld? I think I need to finish Stellar Blade and Death Stranding, and then I can play RimWorld.
Yeah. Yeah. You.
And I need to finish 5 bands of photos. And put up my pool and fix my fence and work and
all the adulting things that you've been putting off to.
Do we need to take a break? I think we need to take a break. We've been doing this almost an hour and a half. We'll be back, guys.
Sure.
And we're back. That's the start of the episode.
Oh, well, I didn't have mine until just now, so you're just going to have to deal.
We are finally into the news section. I want to lead off with that story that you were looking at, Jason. So yeah. I think it's interesting and honestly don't have a lot of objection to it, but go ahead.
Well, I don't honestly have a lot of objection to it either, though, you know, it kind of flies in the face of, you know, it's people's money. They can spend it on what they want, right? So in a recent story on PC Gamer, Valve confirmed that they recently removed a fairly significant amount of adult games from the storefront because they were making payment processors kind of upset. The writer Joshua Wolins said, and I quote, "It's MasterCard's world. We just live in it."
Yeah. What kind of games, though? You left out that specific part.
Yeah. So, and this is a quote from Valve. We were recently notified that certain games on Steam may violate the rules and standards set forth by our payment processors and their related card networks and banks. As a result, we are retiring those games from being sold at the sold on the Steam store. And basically what those games are some of those, for lack of a better term,
smut games.
Hentai smut kind of games. Or like the adult VN games, visual novel games.
I heard something. I had heard that that it was specifically targeted at those adult style games that had to do with, let's just say, keeping it within the family.
If
you know what I mean.
Yes. So, which is a large amount of those games.
Well, there's, but not all. Like not all.
Not all.
But is, you know, not all. Not all porn is, you know, is, you know, that porn. You know, but
yeah.
I get where they're going. Right. There's, you know, there's a the internet was made for porn, and yeah. We can't really get away from that. That's been
it's an adage as old as three dead trolls in a bag. You look it up.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
And yeah, you know, it's kind of one of those gray areas Steam is stuck in, right? Like, so specifically, pretty much all of these games, according to a different article I'm reading, don't implicitly say you're keeping it in the family, for lack of a better term. What they do to get around Steam's own content rules, etc., is they leave it open-ended for you to enter via text specifically what your relationship is with certain characters. So they're not implicitly incest or step porn, but they don't stop you from entering that in a text dialogue box to answer the game's question as to who is this person to you.
So this is
the real question is, like, why are we this depraved?
I mean, yes. A, yeah. Why does this even exist? Yeah. But B, again, in the internet is for porn. And honestly, honestly, you know, to each their own. I get the fact that that Steam and the card companies are like, okay, I'm not gonna do this. In fact, you know, if you look it up, you know, Pornhub doesn't take credit cards because it doesn't take, you know, payment through those credit cards directly. They go through payment processors that process to those, you know, process things differently. But they don't ever go directly through, through MasterCard or any of those other payment processors because, on the same token, that they don't meet the card processor's requirements to be able to make to take payments through them. They go through a third party company to do that. So it's basically the same deal with Steam. Now, I'm of the mindset that Steam, being a marketplace that has historically been, you know, targeted to, you know, gamer age children, that this shit shouldn't be on this particular platform. And it was
more highly curated prior to the days of Steam Greenlight. You know, if you remember that, that was years ago. But games on Steam were curated in such a way that they were there was a lot more control over it, but it also prevented the storefront from being a good place to find indie games. So when you open that door, you end up letting literally anybody that can create a game about literally anything into the door, you know, in that door. Seeing that Steam is now, you know, kind of cutting back on that is actually a good thing in my eyes, because it means that somebody somewhere is looking at these games and being like, yeah, this doesn't meet the criteria anymore.
Until I realized that you could block most of that stuff anyway from your, you know, discovery queue, I was like, oh, another porn game, another porn game, another porn game. Well, it's like, stop it.
And the thing is that only works if the creator tags it properly.
Yeah, they'll tag it with stuff that you play, plus it's adult.
Right. So, but that only works if the game is tagged properly to, you know, to be, you know, considered adult content. You know, so there's still shit that slips through the cracks, and I know because I've got those blocks set up, and I still end up with like stuff that pops up in the discovery queue that is most definitely, you know, marketed, you know, as an adult game. This, you know, it gives me a little bit of hope that Steam's the platform starts to clean up some of this shit that is really just, you know, it's there for the same purpose that Pornhub exists. It's to, you know, it's there because you're never gonna completely sanitize the internet of or any true platform of all of it. You know, it's just the way it is. I mean, even YouTube has a hard time with this shit. And you know, but if it can be reduced, I'm all for it. There's always going to be a storefront where these games can exist that is kind of like Pornhub, that goes through a completely different payment processor. If you want to get games that, you know, that is of this content type, I'm sure that there's going to be a place for it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely there is. You know there is. I'm sure there are probably a dozen different storefronts like that.
Right. And just leave it on Steam. I'm fine with this.
Also, most of the developers and designers that are creating these type of games are all on like Patreon and shit, and selling the quote latest build of their games there. I see, according to this one article. So I mean, it's not like Steam can't have been that huge of a storefront for them, but I'm sure it brought them traffic from people who you know, don't regularly like go seek out these other storefronts or these people's Patreons, right?
Like it's the same idea as, you know, throwing stuff up and being able to, you know, to show up in the discovery queue. It just gets people's eyeballs on it. You know, and you know, honestly, it's one of those just roll your eyes and move on type of things on, you know, on Steam that I really wish I didn't have to deal with, but here we are. So it's I look at it as, yeah, okay, some people are like, oh, this is, you know, this is some kind of, you know, censorship. They're not censoring it, they're just not caring. You know, you can't buy it on the storefront, but you can definitely buy it elsewhere. Now, it's not like this shit just ceases to exist. It's just that you can't buy it here.
I mean, I'm sick of it clogging up my discovery queue, to be honest with you. I want regular old games.
I use the Discovery Queue as a form of entertainment because, you know, I'm over like 15,000 things through in my Discovery Queue. Like I just sit for hours on end just going through a couple thousand, a couple hundred upwards to 1,000 games on, on the Discovery Queue. And I'm going to say 95% of those games are just shit. it's just dog shit. And there's, less of that would make my, make my little hobby that much more enjoyable.
Well, I've got a story that something we kind of were talking about earlier this year. So there was an interview of Yoshi P. Was it Yoshi P? Yeah, it was Yoshi P. And there are people saying, Expedition 33 was a turn-based game. Are you guys thinking about going back to turn-based games since that was super popular?
Right.
He said it's not real clear-cut, but essentially they're thinking about it. It's not off the table, but they're not sure. And said he would not completely commit one way or the other initially. I think it's a mistake, just being honest. I haven't liked a Final Fantasy game as much as I liked Expedition 33 since Final Fantasy X, and that was 20 years ago. So, right? Like, it's been about 20 years since Final Fantasy X came out. And it's what we're looking for. Want a little bit more control, a little bit more tactical control. These new Final Fantasy games are boring as hell.
So, Expedition 33 basically was... it was a love letter to the old, the old turnstile games or, turn-based games, right? Turn-based RPGs with some interactivity. Perfect. And it worked out great, but it was really a dice roll. It could have turned out terrible. That could have been a complete turnoff to today's gamer, because you have to think the last time that you played a turn-based RPG was Final Fantasy X, right? So that was 20 years ago. There's an entire generation that grew up and started playing video games in that period of time. This could have failed hard for them. Yoshi P, he's said some good things and he said some bad things. He's not perfect. I'll say that when it comes to Final Fantasy stuff, he knows his shit and he knows the gamer side and the boardroom side of things. He was uniquely positioned, during his time working on Final Fantasy 14, to understand the gamer side of things and the boardroom side of things, because he was in both worlds. So when he comes out and says, hey, we acknowledge the fact that Expedition 33, worked, but we can't commit to a Final Fantasy, returning to turn-based RPG based off of their success. It's because big shit happens with Final Fantasy, and if it doesn't make money for fucking Square Enix, then the castle crumbles. Like, there's Final Fantasy is one of their biggest fucking IPs, and if it fails, that's saying something. That's why they spent so much money fixing Final Fantasy 14, to make it a good MMO again, is because if they saw Final Fantasy 14 fail and close, that would have been a massive black mark on the whole franchise. So they spent so much money making that work. And thankfully they did, but yeah, I can see why he'd be hesitant to say, hey, we're going to make another one, right? What they're probably, and most
most likely going to do is they're going to say, hey, this worked. Let's go back to those turn-based games, and reimagine those games and be like, hey, instead of doing a Final Fantasy VII remake style game where it's more action-based, right, let's go and do a Final Fantasy VIII remake or a Final Fantasy IX remake and do those in the style of, Expedition 33 and see if that works. Because they're already working with an IP that already had that as a base. So he has to play the tightrope game, and he's had to had his time in the boardroom speak area. So I'm more apt to listen to how he says things instead of what he says. When it comes to Final Fantasy, I think that's how I read that. It's just, we acknowledge that it was a good thing for them, but we can't translate that to a modern Final Fantasy and ensure that it works.
Well, in different news, there are some potential releases coming up. So there is Ghost Recon game that's in alpha as of later this year. Fallout 3 remake was supposed to launch along Oblivion, but now they're saying that the rumor is that it's late 26 or early 27. And in Fallout news, Fallout 5 is reportedly in development right now, but that's probably got a long tail. And so Dustplugs, the Nintendo Switch 2 PvPE, whatever, player versus environment from Software game, has another game that's being released on multiple consoles, currently codenamed FMC, is supposedly also in the works as well, which I'm hoping they're making another title versus a remake. The reason that a lot of people are saying it's potentially Dark Souls 3 remastered is because 1 and 2 already got remastered. So,
I don't think it needs a remaster. So
I don't either. It's the best looking one without being a remaster.
Right. Dark Souls 3 itself is 110% playable. In fact, I played the fuck out of it, just last year.
This time last year, we were both finishing up Dark Souls.
Right. And that game looks great. Like, it's on par with... Well, it looks a little dated as compared to, say, Elden Ring, but it's fairly close. Like, it's not terrible, right? I don't think it needs a remaster. I don't think there would be that much that needed remastering about that game. The game that does need remastered, Bloodborne needs remastered. Do I think that the unreleased, codenamed title of this thing is Bloodborne? I doubt it. I mean, I think they'd be more upset with it than this. If it's a new IP, if it's a completely new IP, I hope that they don't fall into the trap that that it seems like they have fallen into with the last two things that they've announced. Okay. The trap that I'm thinking of here is there's Night Rain, which is essentially a battle royale, PvE battle royale stealth game. And then there's, you know, with the Duskbloods or whatever it is, the PvPvE game. Those two game types, I despise. I don't like them. I don't like PvPvE games, which is kind of crazy. I'm playing Division 2, which has that element in it in the Dark Zone. I just don't play the Dark Zone. Simple. You know, it's not a game that's built around that. So I choose not to do that part of the game. Easy. If it's a game that's 100% that, I won't play it. Literally, just will skip. So I think they do their best work on, you know, on their original Souls-style titles or Souls-like titles, you know, for instance, like, you know, Sekiro is, you know, is a completely different take on it, but, you know, and balls fucking hard. Still haven't gotten very far in that game. you know, Bloodborne, I missed the boat on Bloodborne. I completely missed the boat on Bloodborne, and it's so hard to play right now because it's locked 30 frames a second. It feels wrong to play. So, yeah, I hope it's more in that line. And I'm looking for something along those lines that's not, you know, falling into the trap of, oh, this is the, you know, this is the end style of video game. We've got to force our game style into this box. No, do your own fucking thing. Because it's always worked when you did your own fucking thing, you know. From Software's, and it could be completely different. Like you have to remember, From Software's, you know, catalog is completely, like, there's some shit that, you know, that you didn't even think was From Software, like fucking Armored Core, From Software. It didn't fucking click for me for a long fucking time.
Yeah, they do a lot of different things.
You know, so it could be something completely different that we're not even fucking, like, it's not even on anybody's radar, and they're just going to, like, it's going to, you know, slap somebody in the face. Oh, fuck. I wasn't even thinking that it could be this. So, yeah, I just want a good game. That'd be great.
What other things do you guys have?
I have a little bit of a follow-up to, you know, our little AI rant. You know, so I was, I took a look a little further into this, and I saw some stuff, you know, floating around on the internet about YouTube's monetization policies and how it's specifically related to gaming channels. Because there was a, supposedly there was a tweet that was put out, it looks like a tweet. Yeah. From YouTube that said, you know, that was saying that, YouTube would no longer monetize gaming channels. And the reasoning behind it was, impacting gaming content and, you know, young children's attention spans, fostering healthier and viewing environments for kids, yada, yada, yada. Basically, some bullshit. I don't know if that was made up. So I went and took a look and was trying to find other sources for this, because it was an image of a tweet that didn't go directly back to it. So what I found is that it's not that tweet doesn't look genuine. A and B, they are making the changes that we were talking, you know, I was talking about earlier about monetization as far as, like, AI generated shit, right? What it's trying to target is these types of, you know, of like the shorts that are that use like the Minecraft parkour shit with the AI generated voiceover, that kind of content. Whereas, you know, as I was saying earlier, the stuff that has human input or you know, or has creative direction from a human, that isn't going to be, you know, targeted by this. So things like ACG and, you know, and Angry Gamer Nerd and a bunch of other stuff that, you know, that is a dude or a chick sitting in front of a microphone talking about video games, kind of like what we do with video game information and statistics and, you know, and gameplay in the background, that's not going to get targeted. That's, you know, that stuff can still be, you know, that can still be monetized, you know, even though some of those creators don't actually monetize through YouTube. What it's targeting is the mass produced, easily replicated, you know, repetitious content that is basically the brain rot of YouTube when it comes to, you know, and it has gaming as a backdrop. Or is somehow tied to gaming in some way, shape, or form. That's the kind of shit that's going to get monetized. And that was basically along the same lines as I was, you know, as I was talking about earlier.
Just necessarily mad at that.
Yeah, you're gonna need to put a little bit of effort into it to be able to make money off of it, which makes total sense. You know, because if I wanted to and I had the right tools, I could sit down and in a day make a month's worth of fucking shorts, YouTube short content, you know, 2 to 3 minute long videos with random shit put together, throw that to the algorithm and just make money the rest of, you know, rest of the month off of one day's worth of work. And that's what's happening. That's what's, you know, that's what they're targeting right now. So. I'm okay with this. This is another one of those things where it's like, bring the creativity back. You have to be included as a human to be able to make money off of this shit, which is perfectly fine. It gets rid of all the Sasquatch videos, rid of all the fucking, like, the Minecraft parkour bullshit, would you rather situations, you know, all of those low effort, fucking low value content bullshit that, you know, that just clogs up the algorithm. So, I'm happy with this. This is okay. I'm not a big fan of YouTube's content policies and monetization policies for the most part, but at least this makes sense.
Well, Jason, did you have anything else?
Well, only other thing, and I'm sorry, my kids knocked at my door, so I missed if you talked about this or not. But Elden Ring Nightreign will be coming out soon and adding 4 Everdark Sovereigns on July 31st.
Well, I was going to say it is already out, but...
Or it's out, but they're adding 4 additional Sovereigns.
It's a hard game to play by yourself. I think, for me, I've been waiting for 2-player mode so I can try to play it kind of like I was playing Helldivers. And when they release, they've talked about doing a content patch for 2-player mode, but I haven't seen a rumored release date for that yet.
It's just not so.
It's kind of frenetic.
I'm sorry.
It's kind of frenetic. It's not as. It's not a game that wants you. Just got to go.
Right, and that's the thing. I've always played a Souls game, and it kind of teaches you to do this. Like, it really does. It teaches you right from the very get go, and. You know, in Dark Souls 1, don't rush in, right? Take things one step at a time, and just like you got to trudge through it. And sometimes you're walking through muck, but man, you have to like, if you fucking run into a room and you're not prepared, you're gonna die fast. And then Night Rain is so fast, and it takes that, you know, it takes what they've, you know, they taught you over multiple games and turns it on its head. And you're like, how do I even play this? This game does not follow the same rule set. It looks the same as, you know, as Elden Ring, but it plays completely different from Elden Ring. So it would ruin Elden Ring for me if I tried to play it. And because I don't want to ruin Elden Ring for me by trying to play it, I just won't play it. Simple. You know, because I do eventually want to go back and play Elden Ring for the fourth time so that I can go through the DLC for the second time. But I think Night Rain would fuck it up for me. So there is a subset of people that enjoy the fuck out of that game, and that tweaks their own. Yeah. You enjoy that game perfectly fine. It's not for me. You know, that, you know, the whole premise of that game, not for me. Just won't do it. I've got nothing else, man. I've got
The only other thing I have right now is super quick. Been playing Stardew Valley for a long time, right? It is literally the best rated Steam game of all time right now.
I mean,
it's a fun game.
It's a good game. I've only ever played through it once, and the only reason why I don't want to play through Stardew Valley again is because it forces you to do the whole relationship simulator thing with the town.
And I'm always chasing the dragon, trying to find another game that scratches the same itch, and nothing quite does it.
Yeah, it's
the putting things in great rows and setting up your profits. I don't know. It's just kind of like crack. I like it, but yeah, nothing Stardew's like Stardew.
They get close, but they fall flat on their face. You know, there's, it's just, yeah, it's a unique game, and fucking good on them for having, you know, such a following. I don't think they expected that, when they, you know, when they made the game, it wasn't, they never expected it to be this good. That's for sure.
Yeah. It scratches an itch that no other game does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I really don't have anything else unless you do, Jason.
Nope. So with that, guys, find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/tiltcastshorts with a Z. And search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got, well, all those shows don't exist. Picking Up the Pixels or Pupcast and TVGP.TV. Boston's still awesome and still doing podcasting with that. See you at the show.
All right.
Peace.